This is Todd Butterfield for ID the Future, and we welcome back today Professor Michael Flannery, expert on Alfred Russel Wallace, who is the co-founder of the theory of evolution by natural selection. And unlike Darwin, Wallace believed that there are sharp limits on what natural selection can explain, and thought that there is convincing evidence of intelligent design throughout nature. Michael is author of the book Alfred Russel Wallace, A Rediscovered Life. Welcome back to the show, Professor Flannery.
Thank you, Todd.
Well, much ado has been made of the idea that William Shakespeare might not be the author of his works, or the works attributed to his name. Now, Professor Flannery, from what I understand, possibly Darwin should be put under the same microscope. What have you found out?
Well, that's what some have said in a recent article. Someone has referred to the work of a criminologist by the name of Mike Sutton at Nottingham Trent University, who claims basically that Darwin stole the theory of natural selection from a fellow by the name of Patrick Matthew, and that he basically should be regarded as a thief. And he makes the same claim about Wallace, but there's little credibility to this. As a matter of fact, there's nothing new here. I mean, people have been charging Darwin with plagiarism for years. I mean, it actually goes back to shortly after The Origin of Species was written. It was published in November of 1859, and Reverend Baden Powell sent Darwin a letter essentially accusing him of not properly acknowledging his predecessors, including, of course, the Reverend Powell. So there are many other people who have made the same claim. And as a matter of fact, Matthew had accused Darwin of not giving him proper credit way back in 1860. So this Sutton piece, which claims to have uncovered new incontrovertible evidence that Darwin stole the theory of natural selection from Patrick Matthew, is just simply not new.
So why would Darwin plagiarize? Do you have a theory about why he would go about doing this?
Well, I don't think he did, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a claim that is often made by people who, I guess, want to make news where there is none.
Gotcha.
I don't think there's a lot of real substance here. I mean, for one thing, it's important to realize that Darwin himself acknowledged Matthew's contribution in a historical sketch, which Darwin appended or added to the third edition of Origin of Species in 1861. And Darwin even pointed out that Matthew's argument for natural selection was interspersed in various passages, actually in an appendix to a book on naval timber and arboriculture in 1831. It wasn't exactly the central theme of Matthew's publication, but it is there, and it was interspersed, and it was a little vague, but Darwin acknowledged it.
So there really isn't any solid evidence, from what you understand, that there would be plagiarism going on. You're saying that Darwin made reference to the person to whom this recent article is saying he stole things from. You mentioned naval timber? Was that just some sort of other study? What's that?
Well, actually, Patrick Matthew was an arboriculturalist, and he had done work on timber growing and the use of timber in shipbuilding. And the particular book is about tree raising for the building of ships. And the section on natural selection is a couple of several vague mentions in an appendix to that work in 1831. But again, it's important to realize that Darwin did acknowledge it. Now, Sutton actually accuses Wallace and Darwin both of being sloppy. Now, I don't know exactly what he means by sloppy. The charge that Wallace stole this theory is even more ridiculous, because Wallace came up with the theory that Darwin acknowledged to be very much like his own, or at least at the time he thought was very much like his own, while he was suffering from a malarial fever on the island of Ternate in 1858.
Okay.
And he wrote a letter called On the Tendency of Varieties to Depart Indefinitely from the Original Type, and he sent that to Darwin, and that launched Darwin on actually finishing the long languishing manuscript he had on Origin of the Species. But it wasn't like Wallace was sitting in, you know, London libraries with ancient tomes and books and
right.
Patrick Matthews treatise in front of him. I mean, the guy, it came to him in the midst of malarial fevers, and he couldn't get out and do his specimen collecting like normal, and he turned his thoughts to theory, and that's what he came up with. So, I mean, the charge is really kind of ridiculous.
Wow, that's really interesting. Is there some place where you have summarized sort of an analysis of this, I'll call it an accusation, or others have done it in the past, where you can kind of dig into it like you've described for us?
Well, if you go to Evolution News and Views, I did a recent post on that called Darwin's Theory of Evolution, or Patrick Matthews, and you can read all about it there, and I kind of lay out why I think this charge or this claim is bogus. The other thing that I think is worth recognizing when you think about these claims of plagiarism, and again, there have been many through the course of Darwinian historiography, is that if there's actual plagiarism involved, the theories have to be pretty much the same. But really, when you start burrowing into Wallace's theory of evolution and Darwin's theory of evolution, they actually wind up being quite different. And after some pause and some analysis of the respective theories, many contemporaries at the time and since have acknowledged the differences between Wallace's theory of evolution and Darwin's. We don't really have time to get into it right here, but there really are some substantial differences. The other thing that I think is worth noting is that when Patrick Matthew wrote his 1831 piece and he came up with some suggestive hints of natural selection, there was really no context for them. And I mean, there was no larger framework in which to place them. But when Wallace sent Darwin his letter that I had mentioned earlier, there really was a context for it. And it came from Wallace himself. It was called a Sarawak Law Paper, which was published in 1855. And he stated in there that every species has come into existence coincident both in space and time with closely allied species. And then he laid out four geographical principles and five geological principles by which evolution supposedly operated. And so Darwin knew this when he got the letter. And then when he saw the letter in the context of the Sarawak Law paper, it all made sense. And you just don't have that with the Matthew piece. So the one thing I think that, and the reason why I tend to discount these plagiarism claims is, number one, I don't think there's much historical substance to them. But second of all, it takes the focus off of Darwin himself. And what we generally call Darwinism, or social Darwinism, or a Darwinist, all the different
right.
forms you can use for that word, they're legitimate. And Darwinian evolution deserves the term Darwinian evolution because it really is Darwin's theory. You start looking elsewhere and start suggesting that, maybe Patrick Matthew really came up with this, and in fact, at one point, Lauren Isley, who was a writer in the 20th century, wrote a book about Darwin and the mysterious Mr. X, in which he accused Darwin of plagiarizing, not from Matthew, but this time from a museum curator by the name of Edward Blyth. So, I mean, there's this like long list of people that Darwin has supposedly copied from or plagiarized from, and it takes the focus off Darwin. And I think as historians, and I think as even as lay readers, as we think about evolution and change through time, we want to look and focus on that so-called downhouse figure, of Charles Darwin, because he really did come up with this theory. He had been working on it since the 1840s, and it began developing, I believe, even long before his voyage on the Beagle.
Well, it's interesting that we would want to, not on purpose, but if there's evidence, to disprove the folks that are being connected to him or not, in a plagiarism way or even a predecessor way, which makes it seem like we really value his contribution. And yes, it is he, based on what you say, it sounds like he is really the one who originated the view that we refer to most commonly today, Darwinian evolution. But I also have this sort of back of my mind, except amongst historians and folks who like to parse these things, is there really there's sort of a so what? Because yes, we could talk about Darwin, but and where he went and whether or not he came, because when I write something, I've read a bunch of things before I write it, or anybody does research. So there's going to be elements of that in my mind as I refer to it. Does it really matter in the big picture of things for intelligent design folks or Darwinian evolutionists?
I think for intelligent design folks, they want to focus on not so much the theory of natural selection. That is a part. It's a key part, a key element in the theory of evolution, which, you know, is a pretty slippery term. I mean, if you talk about evolution, you're just talking about change through time. The key question is, what do we mean by change through time? How does that change occur? And what is the role of chance? What is the role of blind operations in determining what that change is going to be? Is it these blind, thoughtless, chance and random processes, or is it directed? Is it guided by some force, some mind, something beyond itself? That gives it, in some cases, teleological purpose. That's just a fancy word for purpose, or in some ways makes it intelligent. So the question of who is, to some extent, as you point out, sort of misdirected. However, I do think it is useful to keep the focus on Darwin. And the reason why it's useful to keep the focus on Darwin is you can see the processes of chance, the way he was quite swayed by the notion of blind, law-like processes, as he often liked to refer to them, how he was swayed by the power of those things to explain. And once you realize that, you realize that the theory of evolution that Darwin was developing was a theory that really did have no intelligence behind it. It really had no creative purpose. It had certainly no creator behind it. And by keeping your focus on Darwin, you can go all the way back to his notebooks from the 1830s and see that developing. When you start, you know, losing your focus and worrying about, well, who really developed the theory of natural selection, then you're forgetting about some of the larger issues involved in evolution, which is the degree to which chance or purpose has a role in the evolutionary process.
Well, that makes sense.
I think you can keep your focus directed on that by looking at the author of that theory and the generally accepted author of that theory. I believe the historical figure who deserves to be credited with that theory, and that's Charles Darwin.
That's perfect. That's a great answer. Honestly, I needed you to explain it because a lot of other folks, I suppose, would think the same as I. Why does this matter? And it really does.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to get sidetracked.
It does matter. And it matters even more when you think about it in the context of Wallace. And here's why. Both of them believed in evolution. Both of them believed in natural selection. But here's the key difference. Darwin basically saw things as purposeless. as being guided by blind, law-like processes that could go one way or another, as he refers to them, with no more direction than the course with which the wind blows. Okay?
Right.
Wallace didn't come to believe that, even though he was a staunch defender of evolution and co-author of the theory of natural selection. He came to believe in what I call intelligent evolution, the idea that there is intelligence and purpose behind the processes of evolutionary change. In fact, he referred to it as an overruling intelligence.
Well, you made me feel like perhaps we should not only put the focus or bring the focus back to Darwin, but also maybe make a lot more of Wallace.
Well, I think you could, and I think you know, if people want to read my book that you had mentioned at the opening of this session, Alfred Russel Wallace: A Rediscovered Life, that would be one way to get started on that. Also, there is a website, alfredwallace.org. In which people can dig a little bit more. There's some video material in there. There's some excerpts from the book in there. And there's a whole section of FAQs in there.
Now, that is really good to know. I'm glad we went as far as we did on this topic because it helped me. And hopefully it'll help a bunch of other folks. Thank you for joining me on the show and explaining it to me today.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's always a pleasure.
Until next time, this is Todd Butterfield for ID the Future.
Hi, I'm Doug Axe, and I have a new book coming out on July 12th titled Undeniable: How Biology Confirms Our Intuition That Life is Designed. And I think this book will give you a new take on your intuition about the design of life. If you go to the website undeniabledesign.com before July 12th, you have an opportunity to pre-order the book and receive some gifts. You'll get three books, one called Science and Human Origins, I did a chapter in that, another called Debating Darwin's Doubt that I've contributed to, and a copy of The Unofficial Guide to Cosmos. In addition, you get an opportunity to participate in a private exclusive conference call with me and Michael Medved, where you can put questions to me about the book and I'll do my best to answer them. So go to undeniabledesign.com before July 12th, pre-order the book, and you get these gifts, an opportunity to participate in the conference call. And be sure to tell your friends and family about the opportunity to pre-order as well at undeniabledesign.com.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.